Okay, thank you, Terry. And now our main speaker is from the Fourth Dimension Group, and his name is Chris.
Everybody, my name is Chris Kelly. I'm an alcoholic. About midway through that, Terry leaned back and said, raise the bar high, you know, with Greg. And I'm like, man, all right. And I got extremely self-centered for a minute. I'm sitting there. I was like, oh, man, why did we get this guy Omaha in here? What's going on here? So, I got sober St. Patty's Day, 2009. God got me sober, really, is by the grace of God, because I'm like Irish, St. Patty's Day, come on. I didn't even know it was St. Patty's Day in 2009. And my home group is the Fourth Dimension Group, and I have a sponsor. My favorite color is blue. I drive a Nissan Frontier. Alright. So, now, by the grace of God, I got sober March 17, 2009, and I truly thought my life was over. And thank you, Greg, man. Greg truthfully told, like, he told my story, like, everything, and I got into it. I was laughing and having a good time, and then, like, Terry turned around and hit me off with that, and I was like, wait, I gotta speak next, so I gotta I'm from Newport Richey. I grew up in Newport Richey. I have loving parents that are still together to this day. They love me. They gave me everything I needed as a kid, and you know, mostly everything I wanted. I was spoiled. I was an only child. I thought the world revolved around me. So, like, eighth grade, maybe, all my friends are drinking. Well, what was going on, right? We were riding bikes up at this parking lot, and all my friends are smoking cigarettes, and I'm not smoking cigarettes, and I don't really play sports. I don't really do anything. We just hang out in parking lots, and we skateboard, and we ride bikes. And we were at this Walgreens, and there was this guy who I still see walking around town, you know. Yeah, come on, dude. Like, you're good. Turn it up. We good? Yeah, sure. Is it even on? You guys hear me? All right. So, I'm hanging out in this parking lot. The kids I'm with are smoking cigarettes at this time, and they want this guy to buy us some cigarettes. So he went in the store, got them some cigarettes, and he came out with, like, he probably used our change looking back now, you know, but he came out with a plastic bottle of vodka. And he invited us to his house to go drinking, which was kind of, you know, it's super creepy looking back now, but at the time we were like, all right, whatever. So it was like a group of us and this weird old dude, and and you know, we had this, it was like a really nice house. It was in a pretty nice neighborhood, and his family was up in New York, and they bought this house, and I don't think they probably just sent him down. I don't know what the deal was, but he had this nice house to himself, and I'm sure they didn't want him doing this, you know. But he's lining these plastic cups up on the bar, and he's good. He's like this fat New Yorker dude, and he's going 1, 2, 3, and he's like pouring vodka and turning back and coming back, and like I didn't know what was going on. Everybody got a cup, they started drinking. The magic didn't happen for me that night, you know. I tried. This guy was making some real stiff drinks, like super, you know, this guy was making drinks like that he wanted to drink, and a little bit of orange juice, a lot of vodka, and it was disgusting. I didn't choke enough down. I didn't, you know, the magic didn't happen. All my friends they seemed drunk, and like I was kind of like playing it up, you know, to kind of feel like, because I'm all right now, I'm not fitting in, like this whole group is getting drunk and I'm not, and so I'm trying to act a little drunk. And what happened was, a few weeks later, like that was on my mind like big time, because all my friends by this time are all drinking, and you know, like when we could, it wasn't, you know, we weren't like, I don't know, hanging out on Skid Row or anything, but we were trying, you know, that was the talk at school, was to get loaded, and then on Friday we would try to pull it together, and that's what happened. So within a few weeks of that, I found myself in the back of this kid's Bronco. Like he was like old for our grade. He was like a year ahead. No one drove, and we were in his, like, it was like an old beat up 4x4 Ford Bronco. I can tell you exactly, like, I don't know, I could tell you exactly where I was, what time of the year it was, everything. It was just like, I can feel like I'm sitting there right now. There was two kids in the front seat that I was, you know, know, they played on the varsity football team, and I was a little, like, kind of, I don't know, it wasn't real friendly with them, so it was kind of weird being with them, and I was with my friend that was, like, my best friend through high school, did everything with. So these two guys, me and him, I'm feeling less than, I'm feeling uncomfortable, I'm fearful. I'm like, if my dad knew I was out here doing, you know, God knows what we're about to do right now. Like, I kind of knew what was going down, and we started smoking a blunt, and we started a bottle of Goldschlager started going around, and some warm cans of Ice House started going around this Bronco, and it's a terrible combination, really. But by the time that stuff started going around, man, like, I don't know, everything passed me, you know, once or twice or whatever, and I remember, like, I don't know, so cliche, everyone's like, oh, their shoulders went back and all that kind of stuff, but I just remember, like, everything just slowing down, and, like, everything just kind of, like, I don't know, just the noise in my head shut off. Like, I didn't know what was going on, but I loved it. I absolutely loved every bit of it. I just felt at peace. I felt like these guys were, you know, lucky to have me in their vehicle at that time. Like, I felt like not the way I felt on the way out into the woods, just put it that way. You know, I don't know. I felt one with these guys. I felt connected, and it was really all I ever wanted. I didn't know I was looking for that. So from here on out, this is like all I want to do. And like I said, it wasn't a daily thing. It wasn't even really an every week kind of thing. But the seed was definitely planted. Like, that was relief. That's where I go when, you know, how bad was my life? I was in whatever, eighth or ninth grade. It wasn't really that bad. But man, I loved every bit of it. And I knew in my head that that's what we're doing from now on. Like, I didn't do anything, like I said, sports or anything like that. Like, I practiced one whole summer with the football team. We started, like, hitting, and I quit the next day. Like, I just, that's the truth of the matter. Like, I quit everything. I did, I was in karate from, you know, all the way to my black belt, or brown belt with, like, two black stripes, like, getting ready, and I found out for the black belt test, you gotta, like, spar three people, and I quit. Like, I quit everything. I don't have any kind of stick through, you know, stick-to-itiveness. I'm a quitter, and you know, so by the grace of God, I've been sticking around here. Truthfully, like, it's not my power doing that. I know that today because I quit, and I don't do this kind of stuff. So I'm not really feeling like connected to these guys in any way. I don't play sports with them, anything like that. But I knew, like, I was gonna do this. Like, this was my thing, and I was gonna wear that. I was like, you know, I'm going to be a stoner, and that was my thing. Like, I was, you know, I'm well aware of the traditions, and I have the utmost respect for the traditions of Alcoholics Anonymous, and this program absolutely saved my life, and I know I'm a real alcoholic. I know I'm an alcoholic of the hopeless variety, and I belong here, not in any other fellowship, but, you know, so I'll just kind of briefly touch on that stuff, but I know I can't drink safely, so... But I started smoking pot every day, so I'm doing that, and I was like, this is what I'm gonna do. I was like, I used to drive around. I had this little CRX, and I used to drive around, and I would just be like, having these deep talks with my buddies, and I would be like, we had like four people always in a two-seater car, like always loaded, and just like smoking and drinking and just doing retarded things, and we're driving around, and I was like. And I know, I was like, I told them, I knew how they picked the speed limits for streets. Like, I really thought, like, the county commissioner got stoned or drunk and drove around, like, the city and was like, all right, this one's going to be 30. Because, like, everything just felt so right. Like, I felt like, that's seriously a true story. Like, I was out there. And this is when all this stuff was working, mind you. Like, this is when everything was clicking. I was not even out of high school. So, not like texting or anything, just looking at my time. I barely squeaked through high school. Like, everybody I hang out with has goals, and, like, I don't know, they were doing things to gear up for college and stuff, and I'm working for my dad's lawn service, and I'm leaving school at, like, 10:30, and I'm cutting grass and drinking and just kind of hanging out, and I'm not really, like, I was hanging out for, like, the next 15 years. Like, literally, that was my life for, like, from there. But that was way more appealing to me. I was making pretty good money for like a high school, you know, they always say like, oh, you don't, like I didn't drop out of school, but like all the kids that were dropping out to go do construction stuff, they're like, you don't want to do that because one day, you know, your body's not going to, you're not going to want to do this forever, but like you can't tell someone like me that, you know, I see money in front of me and I want to just do that. So tried moving to college. To Orlando. I didn't go to college, but I moved with a group of guys that was going to college. I guess it was my first geographic. I didn't know much about that then. One time before that, my dad was sober in Alcoholics Anonymous, and one time before that, I got caught. I got arrested outside the prom. I wasn't going to that prom, but I got arrested. So that was my first. This is the kind of stuff that continually happened, like truthfully, like just over and over, every 30 or 60 or 90 days, something like this was happening. I got arrested out there, and that was my first kind of push into AA. And I went to AA. My dad was sober in AA, so he took me to a meeting, and I didn't want a thing that was going on in that room. Like, it was, I was just, you know, I could justify anything. And if that girl hadn't run that red light and we didn't get pulled over, you know, like, I was just hanging out at Ybor, dressed up with these good-looking girls, and now I'm in, like, this room in Newport Richie with, like, these... They were singing happy birthday to this grown man for his sobriety birthday, and I was like, what the hell did I get myself into here? I was like, and I respect it now, and I love that stuff now, but I was, at the time, I was like, you have got to be kidding. Like, what am I doing here? Like, this is pathetic. So, I don't know where the hell I'm at. I'm in Orlando. I had to move home. I get arrested around that time. So back, you know, that's my little push back in AA. Still, I don't want a thing you guys have. You know, I don't need all this higher power. I don't need this higher power of people. I don't need any of this stuff because I am my own higher power. I've been managing and running things fine. And if everybody would just do exactly what I needed them to do, like everything Greg was talking about, man, that's exactly my story. Like, I can't even see that everything I'm putting my family through and all these poor people around me, like, I don't see any of that. It's just, only thing I see is exactly what I want right in front of me. And I'll hurt you to get it, and I'll rob from you and everything else. And what's going on at this time, although I don't even know it, is my behavior is getting progressively worse. And I'm doing things that I would have swore I would never do, you know, and I'm kind of moving the bar. As soon as I get up to it, I can justify and be like, well, that wasn't quite, you know, I was kind of messing with that, you know, but I'll take it to the next level. And pretty much the next, like, 10 years of my life, you can flush down the toilet. Like, there was a lot of, it's the truth, like, there was a lot of me trying to control and enjoy my drinking, and I couldn't pull it off. And there was, you know, periods of abstinence, I guess you would call it. I lied about 30 days one time. I went to a treatment center, and, you know, really, like, I wasn't sold on the idea that I couldn't drink for the rest of my life. Like, I've shared this before. I've had the same exact experience. I think a lot of the guys were laughing here that Greg was talking about with ex-girlfriends and stuff, but I didn't even have a girlfriend at this time. And I wind up in AA, and I'm like, certainly I'm going to drink at my wedding. I'm like, this is not, I know, like, a day at a time, but forever. And I'm like, no girl even wanted anything to do with me, but, you know, that's where my mind's at. I'm like way out in the future, and, but still maintaining, everything's going good. I got my apartment, I'm going to work, I cruise up to the Regency pub. I was making fake IDs in high school, so we got these, me and my buddy Nailed had to make the original hologram fake IDs, so I don't know what the kids do with the sideways ones now. I see that now. But so anyway, you know, we got the deal down. We know how to make them, and we're drinking at all these little dive bars around town. And mine was the Regency Pub, and I used to, there was an older woman there. She was like 26 at the time. Her name was Claire. She was the bartender. They used to have a real good deal on pitchers, so the strongest kind of beer that they had coming out of there, they had three beers. They had Bud Light and Amberbach, right? So we would get Amberbach because it was stronger. We thought it was anyway. Like, yeah, all my boys and me, like, we gained, like, 20 pounds that summer, but, like, because we're drinking, like, it's like maple syrup, you know? Like, but I would go in there, man. I would park in the back, and I would go in there, and she would see me coming in, and there would be a pitcher there, and I had arrived. Like, I get what Bill's talking about in his story when he said that. Like, I felt like my ego was through the roof walking into that place. And I didn't even know that's what was going on. But I would, you know, I would sit down, I would get drinking. I wouldn't plan on staying the whole night. Because the night before, right, I was late to work that morning. And the night before, I really overdid it. And I'm really kind of broke right now, so I'm just going to stay for a few. And then I would start drinking, and maybe I'd go up there to meet somebody, or maybe just to watch the, you know, the first half of the Monday Night Football, and then I'm going home. And then what would happen every single night is they would be kicking the lights on, and I didn't know how I was still there, right? And I'm really, and this is like, I was running credit cards up everywhere else, but this was a cash-only place. Like, we're going back in, like, prehistoric times at this little pub, right? So this is a cash-only bar, and I'm making my tab there. I'm, like, not paying other bills to keep this bar tab going. And truthfully, at the time, this was okay with me. Everything was working fine. Like, this was fine. So, I cruised on a little bit, and things really never got much better than that. Like, that's about as good as my drinking was right there. Like, I don't know. Everybody kind of progressed on, was moving on in life, and I would get hit with waves of self-pity. Like, why am I not getting married? Why am I not graduating, because I wasn't in college, you know, like, why am I failing out of college, like, all these things, and, like, that's all that I would be thinking about, and, you know, around this time, I'm getting evicted out of the apartment, I'm getting rid of everything, because what happens is, my grandfather is really just loving me to death, literally, like, he is just, I'm an only child, I'm his only grandchild, and this guy, like, I used his love for me, and I manipulated the hell out of this dude, and I would, there would never be a moment that wasn't too convenient for me to slide over to his house and try to get a little money out of him, or, you know, he was buying me vehicles, like, because I'm wrecking all my vehicles, and, you know, drunk driving and stuff, and I'm getting arrested a lot by this time, and he's paying for lawyers, and I can't not drink, though. I can't not drink, and I got to do what I got to do, so I'm going to go over there and I'm going to get some money from him. And that's where my mind was at the time. And around this time, he passes away. So there's people that are, like, flying in from New York, driving across the state for this funeral. Funeral's at 11 in the morning, right? So the night before, I know I'm going to be sick if I don't have a few things and if I don't keep drinking to get me to that funeral in the morning. I ain't making it to the funeral, so I start drinking the night before, and you know the story. You know, I didn't show up for the funeral, and my family's calling me like, "Where are you?" But see, they were kind of hip to the deal because they didn't want me ruining all their occasions. They waited until he was in, you know, he's in like one of the mausoleum or like a wall. So they waited till he was in there and everything, and then called me to see where I was. You know, and this is the kind of stuff that I keep seeing when I'm sober. This is the kind of stuff that when you guys tell me, yeah, just don't, well, not you guys, but, you know, rooms that, whatever, AA meetings near me were saying, yeah, just, you don't have to drink. And I'm hearing, like, take my solution away, and this is what I'm, this is my life now, and this is all the things I'm thinking of. I'm thinking I can't even make it to my grandfather's funeral. You're like, just, I feel like a piece of crap, really, by this time, and it just fueled it more. You know, it was fun in the beginning, the pub days and all that kind of stuff, and I was having blackouts, and, like, I would hear about things I did in blackouts the next day, and I was, like, excited to hear about it. I was like, really? I was like, because they were, like, telling me about this person that I was, like, I didn't think I was that person. I was like, they were, like, you know, all my friends, and it would be funny, and we'd be, like, hanging out after a good party. And then by the end, they're telling, like, I remember I pushed a girlfriend and, like, got in her face and was just screaming at her. And I found all, you know, all this out the next day. And I felt worse about how my buddies were looking at me, telling me this story, than I did for the girl. You know, and that's just the truth of how the person that's standing before you before I got hooked up with Alcoholics Anonymous, that's the person that showed up here. You know, I was more concerned with these guys not approving of me than the terror that I put in this girl. So these are the kind of things that's coming right to the front of my mind when it's time to sober up, and I'm not really feeling it. You know, I would wind up, the court system put me in a few different treatment centers, and same deal. You know, I do all right in them, and I don't know. I get a little... See, I don't really even know what's going on. My alcoholism's really calling the shots. Like, my parents would let me kind of clean up at their house a little bit, and I would swear by them. I'd tell them, you know, I am so done this time. I really mean it, and I truly did mean it. And they'd take me to the store, get me a few shirts, you know, because by this time, I'm an animal. I'm running around. I'm homeless on the street. So they would kind of get me looking a little better and let me clean up at their house a little bit, and they'd go to work, and I'd steal something and then start it over again, you know, and... Around this time, I wind up, fast forward through all this crap, right? So, a lot of that keeps happening. I keep getting arrested. I wind up at the Tahitian Motel, which if you've ever been to Holiday, I know we're in Tampa, but if you ever get out my way, there's a nice motel. It's $30 a night, and I'm staying out there, and I'm sharing a hotel room with a girl that's, selling her body on 19, which is kind of our Nebraska, if you will, out there, and, you know, just, I want it all to be over, you know, but I can't get sober, is what I feel in my head. I can't do it, and, my dad would come by there and pick me up, and, he would say, come to the meeting with me, because he'd go to this Saturday morning meeting that I used to go to, well, that I still go to when I'm not working, and, he'd take me to Dunkin' Donuts, and he'd say, just come with me to the meeting, you know, and I just couldn't do it. I couldn't bring myself to walk in there. I don't know why. So I wind up getting arrested again, you know, shocker, the things I was doing. Like, it was just really surprised I don't have a worse record than I do, but it's just every day I was just kind of committing felonies to go do another felony. Like, just it was ridiculous, and... I wound up at a podium like this with an orange and white striped suit in front of the judge in Pasco, and really kind of coming out of a blackout. Like, I was thinking about it earlier. The last thing I remember when the pilot landed the plane in the Hudson River, right? Well, that was like mid-February, I think, that year of 2009. And that's really kind of where my... Like, I remember seeing that on the news and being like, damn, that's crazy. And then, like, I'm sober. So, like, that's like a month there, right? So... But I'm coming out of this blackout. They're telling me that I've been charged with a crime that's punishable by life in the Florida State prison system, and they're setting my bail at $50,000. And I'm like I was shocked. I was like, you got to be kidding me, right? And I had no concern for what happened to anybody. I wasn't thinking that. I was like, I was thinking I got to get out of here. But I knew there. I had burnt through every one of my friends, really the only people talking to me was my family, and they had me at a pretty good distance. So, I wind up, obviously I'm a good life, right? So, but I don't know if I deserved that, but I deserved a lot more time than I got, and, I wound up at a prison in North Florida, in Perry, Florida, Taylor Correctional. By this time in the county jail, I'm kind of doing AA. I'm reading the big book. There's a guy that I sponsored today that me and him hooked up in the pod there, and we were just doing AA. We were talking about the big book. He was telling me about spiritual things. I was telling him about the big book because I had a bunch of book knowledge. I couldn't put it to application in my life. And anyway, I wind up in a prison with no AA coming in, and I see this guy walking with a couple Grapevine magazines and a big book, so I start talking to him. And the guy took me to the steps. Like, what happened was we started walking the rec yard that day, and the gift of identification happened. Like, I believe this dude. I believe that he drank exactly like I did, and I believe he had some kind of an answer. Because whatever he was doing, this guy was free. Like, and we were in prison, and this dude was free. He was walking different. He was talking different. He just had a walk about him. He wasn't a big guy. He's smaller than me. He's like, just whatever. He was just doing something different. And he took me through the steps, basically the first, you know, seven steps, and I told him I had written an inventory in a treatment center before, and he said, well, you know, we said this prayer, and he said, write a different one, and he showed me how he wanted me to do it, which was right out of the book, and I sat and I told this guy things on a state prison rec yard that I wasn't going to tell anybody, you know, and he by the time we walked, like, this guy's telling me things that I was like, man, I really wouldn't. Don't say that too loud in here. I'm like, man, you got to watch me. Like, but this guy, like, was just one-upping me with everything I was saying, and I felt comfortable, and, you know, I don't know. I remember walking back after they closed the rec yard. I went back to my bunk or whatever, and yeah, just sit there for count time, and I remember just sitting there, and I was like, I felt okay. Like, I truly... I don't know, like, it was absolutely the beginning of some kind of a spiritual experience for me, and I couldn't have put those words to it at that time, but I know today it was absolutely God working in my life through this guy, and this guy is not sober right now. Like, I know for a fact that God puts different people, and he put this angel right in my life, you know, because I know that's what it is today. I'll call it exactly what it is. God sent this dude who, because if God would have showed up on the rec yard, I'd have thought, like, I used to eat a lot of acid and go to Halloween Horror Nights, and I would have been like, this is some kind of, you know, flashback on something like that, you know. And really what it was, he sent just another guy wearing blue with some numbers on, you know, with an ID card with his picture on it, and he just started talking to me about AA. So it put me on fire for AA. It absolutely did. I got out shortly after that, started attending meetings with a guy that I had met when I was coming and going in AA, and I got my sponsor the same way, a guy that I had met before that was kind of, I don't know, it seemed like he was doing something different, like advanced AA or something. Like, it just seemed like that walk was different, so I gravitated to that kind of group of guys, and, you know, these are the guys I love today. These are the guys that traveled down here with me, and we started going to meetings, right? And I got out on a Monday. We went to some step group. Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday was tied up with a big book meeting that I went to every single, you know, time it met. Wednesday, he wanted to take me to a men's meeting. I wasn't really feeling that. I had just got away from a bunch of men for like the past couple years, and I was like, I don't know. But I went to this men's meeting, and then Friday we showed up at my home group, which met at a different location and was meeting as a different name, which is all irrelevant, but I got a job that night, right? So we happened to have a business meeting, and they were going around, and the supply person had to resign, or whatever you call it, you know, she was stepping down. So I felt the nudge from the sponsor, you know, because by this time he was my sponsor, and you know, my arm was going up, and I was like, I can do it, I think. And no background checks or nothing. It was pretty awesome, right? So, like, I have a quite an extensive record, you know. And they gave me, this group gave me their debit card, right, and gave me their PIN number, and gave me a little list of supplies of things to go get, you know. And they truly don't know how that made me feel when I came back, and I brought them their stuff, and I didn't rob them. It was like the first time, you know, like, this group of people saw something in me and just trusted me to go do something. But, like, nobody was doing that. My family was looking at me funny for, like, the first year I was home. Like, just kind of, when's this going to... I don't know. It seems all right. But, like, because I had burnt them out with that. I had... That's of my own doing. Like, I did that to them. So, I don't know. That was my group then. I heard someone that used to come to this meeting say that. You know, that became my home group then. And I understand what he was talking about. I knew exactly what he was talking about because I felt like that then. I was like, hey, you know, what the hell are you texting in my meeting? Like, I was just kind of like, this was like my home group and I was taking it serious. And I don't know about... All the while, I'm making amends I don't feel like making. And I'm showing up, and by this time I had started working with guys, and that was just kind of, it was keeping me sober. Like, I don't know what I was doing for them. Still, even to the group of guys I sponsor today, I have no idea what I do for them. I know exactly what they do for me. But I was just doing it. I was doing it because I didn't want to die in that crappy motel room. And I had a little bit of me that wanted to live for the first time, you know, and I wanted to keep moving forward with this. And so we went to the International Convention. My buddy Sean and I, we drove to Texas, which was a horrible idea. Like, last minute, just drove to Texas, and I bumped into the dude that took me through the steps. Like, this is the first person I seen when we got to the registration area was the guy Dirk from prison that I seen. Like, I was, like, hitting Sean. I'm like, dude, that's the guy. Like, I was totally blown away from that. And like I said, he's not sober right now. Like, he was doing AA, and I don't know what happened, but he's in prison in New York. So, my grand sponsor and I were supposed to come down here on a Saturday night, and I'm late to everything. I'm just kind of working out of that, like my sixth year of sobriety. I'm just kind of getting straight with that now, but 7 o'clock meeting right here, Saturday Night Fever, 7 o'clock, so we couldn't make it because I'm late, so we went to Blind Pass at 8 o'clock on a Saturday night, and there's two seats left right in front of the podium, and the two speakers that night were this girl and her sister. So Dan like knows all these random people from all over the state and country, right? So we wind up out at pizza at this giant table, and I'm sitting right next to this girl, right? So we started dating, and it was the first time I dated it. Like, typically, you guys know the AA kind of relationship, like, hang out, we hook up, and then there's, like, a U-Haul involved, and, like, I'm moving in, and, right? Like, that's typically the pattern, and that was my pattern, not sober, but, I mean, that was where my mind was, and it didn't work like that. This girl lived in St. Pete at the time, and I was in Newport Richey, and we had to kind of one weekend, and it was like I was living at my parents' house. It was just, it was a mess, you know. And she spoke, and like we both Googled each other to see each other's mug shots. Like that's how you know you got a winner of a relationship starting off there. But 2 years ago, in September, I married that woman, you know, and I didn't think I was marriage material. Like, I'm telling you, I used to physically fight with my girlfriends, scream at them. I was nobody. Like, I owed amends. I've made these amends, but to girlfriends, families, parents, like, I was a piece of crap. Like, if anybody treated my family the way I treat these women, like, I would want to kill them. So, but I get married, and I can't believe it. Like, and my dad, who's at the top of my resentment list, is my best man. Like, how does that work? But in AA, like, I hated my dad. He was the kind of guy, he would let me, well, first of all, I watched him every day wake up early, go to work, and bring money home, right? So I could have whatever I wanted. And then he was the kind of guy that when I started getting bad, he would go find me a night before my court date and let me stay at his house so that way I wouldn't miss court. And he'd wake me up and take me to the courthouse. I hated him. Couldn't stand him, right? He was the kind of guy that would go work extra hours to pay for a good attorney for me because he didn't want to see his boy in prison, you know, and I hated him. But he's like my best friend today. You know, we talk all the time, daily, a couple times a day. And he was my best man at my wedding, and like, shoot, that was 3 years ago in this September, the wedding. Anyway, my daughter's two. I found myself, don't tell Melanie about the recording. I found myself cutting the umbilical cord to a little girl at East Countryside Hospital, and nothing to describe it. Well, it was gross. That could describe it. It was like, it's like cutting a stack of rubber bands. It's like disgusting what you're doing. But the for anybody who hasn't experienced that, this pretty much sums it up. She had to have a C-section, and we're sitting there, and we're both scared to death. And we were in the hospital like three, 4 days leading up to it, but waiting on, you know, Mallory to be born. And AA was just showing up, like, not physically showing up, because my wife would have freaked out. She was real hormonal, but like just calling our phones, texting, just doing what you guys do, you know, showing up, and just, we love you guys, we're praying for you, all that kind of stuff was just nailing my phone, Facebook, everything. And so they take her in to the C-section area or whatever, and they leave me out, like, in this, like, moon suit in the hallway, and, like, two doctors are, like, scrubbing up and, like, talking about golf or whatever. They're just talking about, like, random stuff, and I'm, like, full of fear, and in, like, this is, like, the biggest thing that has happened to my life, like, ever, sober, anything. I'm, like, what is going on? These guys are just, like, what do you want to eat after this, you know, like, just whatever. And so, but I remember going in there, and, like, it's like 20 minutes of just silence. Like, we were like just praying, looking at each other. Like, I was like, I love you. And we're just back and forth. Like, I don't know. And no real dramatic story to it, but, you know, like a half an hour later, we hear this little baby start screaming and crying, you know, and that little girl has absolutely changed my life. I swear to God, like, God has been so good to me, and I don't know, that little girl just, on days that I don't work late, I get to go pick her up at my mom's house and just bring her home, and she just tells me everything they did all day, and she's talking now, and she just talks her little butt off, and all kinds of stuff, just, you know, we have to watch what we say now, because she just repeats everything, and man, I love that little girl, and we're getting ready to go do it again. My wife is due again in May 26th, and you know, the first Mallory, my first daughter, we were having another daughter. I can't own a firearm. I'm a convicted felon. I'm like freaking out about that. But we were worried about money. We were worried, how are we going to do? We don't know how to raise kids. Like, what are we going to do? We don't know anything about this. Like, and, you know, our families and AA has just showed up and showed us what to do. Like, I think I'm, you can put me up next to any parent there is, you know, like, I feel like I do a good job today. And I don't know where that came from. That came from God, because I don't know anything about it. I didn't read, you know, like, people were giving us books. They're still sitting on my bookshelf. Like, I didn't read any. I read, like, a page or two, and I was just like, well, we'll figure it out. And I don't know. We're scared. I'm scared about doing the next one. Where are we going to have double the money? Like, these are expensive kids. Like, but I don't know. It's, you know, I have faith that, that it's going to work out. And really, if I could just say anything, like, to the new person that wasn't here tonight, if there is a new person that didn't pick up a chip or raise your hand, welcome. You know, I truly thought that this was just about coming here and not drinking for an hour. Well, not drinking the whole day, sitting here for an hour and going home back to my crappy life. You know, a guy I sponsor talks about, he used to think that you went to AA. Like, and that makes sense to me. Like, I really thought that. Like, I thought you go to AA and that's it. And then you go home and back to your life and just do whatever you want to do. And this program has connected me with a power greater than myself, a God that continually shows up and does way more for me than I could ever do for myself. Like, this is not of me to work all day, show up in a tie, and come here and do this. It's not like me to work all day, right? It's not like me to be committed to this family that I am, to get home with the check, to have the money. Like, you get all that monetary stuff as a gift of being sober, I guess. I don't know. Some people don't. Some people lose it all. But, you know, just by not drinking and showing up with money, we've acquired some nice things, and, like, we've purchased a house and things like that. But none of that stuff matters. What matters to me is my parents sleep at night. My mom thanks you. You know, my mom sleeps at night. She's not worried about... They used to turn the ringer off and disconnect their phones, and they're old school, like, house phones, and but they didn't want to get that news in the middle of the night. Like, they knew I was gonna die. That's where I was at. I was 100% hopeless. Like, I was wandering around, unemployed, unemployable, hanging out with streetwalkers with the same clothes on for a few days. Like, that's what I was doing. And they didn't want to get that call in the middle of the night, you know. And they know, my mom knows that when I picked her up, I told her I had to come out here tonight and do this. And, you know, my sobriety birthday was the other day, and she said her heart is full, you know, that she started going to Al-Anon, and, like, I got, like, a little Al-Anon cheering crew, like, this whole little crew of older ladies, man, and I love those ladies. Like, they buy coloring books for my daughter and just hang out, and the love out of that program for my whole family is just, I can't say enough about that either. You know, anybody that makes, now, a good Al-Anon joke is fine, but, like, you know, anybody that makes a distasteful Al-Anon joke has no idea what they're talking about, because God is working in that program. Because we put these people through hell. Like, I did all this, and I was loaded. I don't remember any of it. People told me about it the next day, or the court records told me about this stuff. Like, I had no idea about any of the stuff I did. My family had to watch me do all this sober. So, that has nothing to do for the new guy, though. But the new guy, if you are here, you know, this thing absolutely works. I'm living proof that I truly thought I would be locked up, I would be dead, I was glad with being dead, I was too scared to kill myself, and it's not the case today. You know, I live a meaningful life. I get to sponsor other guys and give this thing away, and that's my absolute joy. My wife is sober, and I'm sober, and she does her. We each go to a halfway house throughout the week, and then we each bring people to our house and take them through the book on the off night because one of us watches our daughter. And my life is so full with that, and when we're busy doing that stuff, her and I get along so much better, and we have such a full life. Like, it's not just about not drinking. I had no clue. I truly had no clue. I thought this was the place you come, hang out for an hour, go back to it, and it's not the case. You know, today I absolutely know without a shadow of a doubt that I have a God that's crazy about me, and I couldn't have told you that before. I couldn't have said that to one person, let alone stand in front of a group of people and tell you that. You know, I was ashamed, embarrassed. I didn't even think it was real, and I know, like I know I'm standing here today, that is absolutely real today. It's real in my life. It's real in my wife's life. My wife has never seen me drunk. My daughter knows nothing about mom or dad being loaded ever. And we're two hopeless people raising this little angel, really. I have no idea what I just said, and I thank you for my life.